News Radio 690 KTSM presents the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archived podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments, 915-704-1776. Now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Hey, it's a history day, Melissa Sargent. And you know what it is? It's Texas History Independence Day. Ha ha.
Yes, it is.
And I think it's Mary Jo Melby's birthday, but she's not in town anymore. There you go.
Yes, it is her birthday today. So it's a double celebration.
That's what we got.
She's
for
a
her.
Big supporter of history.
And, boy, and, I'll tell you. And Texas, as a matter of fact.
So that's there we right. Oh, got
Texas it. History beginning in El Paso. That's the one thing that we always do say. And we got this here show. AM 690, obviously, those people found us, but some of the people, they've been getting to us, and they don't know how they got there on the internet.
Just kind of stumbled.
How'd you do that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's funny. There are people who have actually been looking for things for us online, and they found on El Paso History, and they found our radio show. So if they're interested yourself, you want to share it with friends or family, go to the internet and go to ktsmradio.com, where you can click on the iHeartRadio link, and you can download a link to your phone, your tablet, or your computer, and listen to us anywhere in the world.
All right, you got that trivia thing going today, you do?
Yes, we do. We have two coupons, am I correct?
Yeah, we do.
For Pepe's in the Upper Valley for some wonderful New Mexican food. And that's for the correct answers for our trivia questions, which will be in the second hour.
Second hour today. And then also, I'm going to lunch at Pepe's. I don't know about you guys.
I got to do something else.
You got to.
Yes, and then Bernie's doing some filming with Six Guns downtown.
Oh, so. Cool.
Yeah.
And so Prince McKenzie's here. Are you going to lunch with us, Prince? Good morning.
I'm sorry, I'm not. I have an appointment at Las Cruces at the Farm and Ranch Museum.
But you're
He's all dressed
up, ready to go. Good morning. Welcome
right.
here.
Thank you.
And Woody, you brought Woody with you. Woody
right.
Bear, good morning.
Or Woody brought
good
me.
Good morning. Yeah.
We okay. more or less bring each other.
I made sure Prince showed up today.
We were thinking of talking about railroads, but then this officer from the Civil War showed up.
The cavalry.
Cavalry. That's what you're doing today, huh?
Yeah.
Good for you. And did we figure out the title of what you're doing for the?
Yes, we did. How trains brought not only you know progress to El Paso, but lawlessness.
That's true. And so that's the story today is a railroad history of El Paso. It's something that, even though we may do it like once every 18 months, 2 years, it's something I think needs to be redone because it is a major biggie. How would you guys quantify what is the train history of El Paso? How big a deal was this?
Incredible. All historians that have published are all in agreement that the single most important event in the entire history, 450 years of history, the single most important event is the coming of the railroads.
That Censo Oñate, the next biggie, was the railroad.
Well, and it includes the history of the Spanish conquest.
How's that?
Going back 450 years, the most important thing, they all agree, is the coming of the railroads because it changed the past completely.
Oh, it did. And it also
forever.
Changed Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Right across the
right.
river, their changes also hit the fan pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
By the same technology. So talk about
Southwest,
the technology.
Yeah.
I mean, everything went through here.
Well.
How connected was and is El Paso compared to before trains?
Well, the very first amount of technology that came in was actually brought in by the military. And the military operated. There was a symbiotic relationship between the Army and the railroads. They were both mutually supporting each other. And then they allowed the West to develop. They allowed El Paso to develop. And the steam engine brought the railroads to El Paso. And so the Industrial Revolution came to El Paso in 1881.
And we have locomotive number one. Woody, how old is that train?
That was built in 1857 in New Jersey. And it went to Milwaukee. It went kind of around the country, found its way to Arizona. And Phelps Dodge in El Paso bought that line and brought that locomotive to El Paso. And here it is, a big piece of history.
And guess where it is now?
It is at the Visitor Center, 400 West San Antonio.
It's almost in an office building, sort of like out of the way. Nobody knows it's there anymore.
practically.
That's my opinion.
Correct.
Yeah,
however,
it's protected at least.
They do
then,
call
yeah.
upon us to give school tours and tour groups, and we actually start the tour there. And if it's a school group, we actually talk about safety too, which is an important part of the mission of our Railroad Transportation Museum. Yeah. And then we walk them over to the Union Station, which is another piece of important railroad history and architectural history for El Paso.
Back up two sentences. Tell us about your museum.
Well, our museum is right now appearing in lots of different places. And we have a train on exhibit out on the east side. We give tours downtown today, later on today, and tomorrow. I'm going to be at the Farm and Ranch Museum, but we make appearances all over the Southwest at historic sites. Next week, I will actually be in Columbus, New Mexico, helping to celebrate the attack of Pancho Villa and the battle there.
They have a short little railroad in town still over there, don't they, about 60 feet of track?
Yeah.
Well, it's important. An important thing was that we believe that the very first alarm to Fort Bliss of the attack while it was going on was sent by a conductor.
Oh.
And the engineer was able to stop the train and prevent it from getting into the middle of the battle, backed it up. They saw the battle was going on and that the main buildings downtown were on fire.
Oh, so he was coming from El Paso?
No, he was coming from Arizona, headed for El Paso. And there were two soldiers at the station that were actually killed. They were waiting for the train to come in.
What are the chances that was locomotive number one coming here that day?
No, because locomotive number one was already off of the main lines. And we had big locomotives like our locomotive 3420.
Oh, now that's talking.
Now that could have been.
All right, let's talk about the difference. You've got 3420 out there at a company called Freeport MacMoran, and very kindly is allowing it to be stored there.
Right.
God bless those people. Hey, Freeport, thank you.
Yeah, but they're great. They are great.
They really are.
What's the chances of you putting your museum down there?
They need their space. But we're looking at a lot of different places.
Well, I mean, because they got the train tracks down there, and they've got one of the, they got the car
and
down there.
We're looking all up and down the train yards because we would prefer to have a train station where we could bring our rolling stock up.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that for a second. So you, as the train, El Paso Railroad, what's the official
title? Railroad and Transportation Museum of El Paso.
Okay, so you want to do everything in transportation.
Right.
Okay. So what, are you going to have an exhibit on walking?
Well, not so much walking, but part of that is explained in the history, how people walked and traveled by carreta and by horse from Mexico up to Santa Fe and back down to Chihuahua and Mexico City. That is a part of it. It starts and then it continues with horses and wagons, and eventually we get to trains.
Okay. And you don't stop there. You put airplanes in it?
No, we don't do. It's everything that is surface transportation,
okay,
which
right.
includes automobiles, right. buses.
Prince, you've been doing this since day one, right?
Yep.
When was that?
Well, actually, my great-grandfather came into town building the Texas and Pacific Railroad.
Oh, wow.
And he arrived in 1881.
On a train.
And my family has been here since then.
So you're train-bound. You've got to do this.
Yeah.
It's in your genes.
Right, and so at least a dozen of my relatives had worked for the Southwestern Railroads in New Mexico and Arizona, and I actually worked for the railroads too when I was a student.
Did you do that ice thing down there?
Right.
Oh, tell me about the ice thing.
The ice.
Well, starting. This is a big piece of history.
I know.
Starting in the 1890s, the Union Pacific Railroad and the Southern Pacific Railroad realized that there was a huge fruit basket growing tropical fruits, oranges, all kinds of tropical fruits in Southern California. And so they wanted to get those to eastern markets in addition to vegetables, tomatoes, and lettuce. And so starting in the 1890s, the fastest trains they could run came out of California, came to El Paso. And when those arrived in El Paso, 100 men were lined up on the ice dock. And it was a double-layer dock.
Huge blocks of ice.
And 200-pound blocks of ice were loaded onto the icebox cars, wood icebox cars.
You're talking literally an ice box.
That's right.
That's what we call
it. A real old-fashioned ice box,
yeah.
A turn-of-the-century ice box,
yeah.
Like people had in their homes at that time.
Right.
But this was on wheels. and they would load that in there. And I was an ice man, and crushed ice would be loaded in the tops of the cars while the blocks of ice were rolled into the bottoms of the cars.
And the point being, some important thing, what?
Well, the most important thing was that within 18 to 24 hours, those cars would be in Chicago.
So there's Prince McKenzie working on the Veggie Express.
Yeah, right.
That's
Pacific
cool.
Fruit Express.
No, we're going to call it the Veggie Express.
No, he's just a peach of a guy.
And you had avocados, I'm sure, as well.
Right.
Prince McKenzie's in here. Woody Bear, we're talking about the train history of El Paso, which is incredible, as you stated.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's the one thing as a topic that changed this valley forever. There have been several.
And the West.
Well, I would say the military is ranking up there, but maybe not specific to El Paso as big. Oñate was huge. He named the city, et cetera. So the trains are ranking right up there.
Well, you mentioned the Columbus raid. The Fort Bliss response was via the El Paso Southwestern Railroad from Fort Bliss all the way over there. In fact, they shipped the planes that were used in the punitive expedition from San Antonio to El Paso and then to Columbus, where they were flown.
And those were the Jennies, as they call them? Right, they got one left in the museum over there.
Flying coffins.
And isn't this the crowd here who didn't figure out that when you get to a higher altitude like El Paso, you got to make adjustments?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Well, a lot of adjustments they had to make with
because
those, yeah.
There were showmen that traveled across the country by train, and they would unpack their train. Unpack their plane.
On the train.
Off the train into the streets of El Paso. And then they would load. They would fly off the streets or fly from the parade field at Fort Bliss and do aerial demonstrations.
In Washington Park sometimes.
And Washington Park. And those guys had reported the weather conditions and the air pressure and all of that. And so the military was aware of that when the Jennies arrived, because these cross-country showmen had actually recorded that.
But that is the point. He had to figure that out.
All right.
To the train world of El Paso. Is this one of the more connected train places in the West? I mean, Denver would be...
Okay.
What?
It was bigger than Denver. It was bigger than Albuquerque, bigger than Tucson.
That's what I thought.
And Ron Lyman, one of our associates and a historian and educator, he heads up our education team for the museum. He's a retired educator. And Ron Lyman did some very interesting research. We know that there were 735 people, according to the 1880 El Paso census. And we know that in the 1890 census, there were more than 10,300 people. So Ron Lyman then checked with all of the surrounding cities. And by 1890, El Paso had more people here. There was more business and industry that these people were involved in than all of the state of New Mexico. The territory of New Mexico, territory of Arizona, and Chihuahua and West Texas, there were more people here in El Paso. And El Paso was growing so fast because we had so much business and industry. And the Santa Fe Railroad came to El Paso, and their stockholders were actually from Chicago.
Well, let me tell you, in the drive of putting the train here was one because of the weather. I know they didn't have to worry about the passes being snowed in and such, which has always been the typical. Okay. But secondly, was it also due to the mining interests that were so close down here?
All right. To go back in time, in the 1840s, Congress didn't care about transcontinental railroad traffic or building a transcontinental railroad. But as soon as gold was discovered in 1849...
Change the scene.
Everything happened. And they needed to tie in California to the rest of the nation and all of those states where gold was being discovered in Colorado. And so they had planned, Congress had planned, that the first transcontinental railroad would go through El Paso. And that's why our story, our museum story, is so important. Yes.
Before the program,
Congress was
Utah
already
thing.
Making plans. And then when Lincoln was elected to Congress, when Lincoln became elected president and actually had the power and authority, he said, I don't want the Transcontinental Railroad to go through El Paso.
A southern state.
But, you know, he had another motivation, and that was his constituency was Indiana, Nebraska, Ohio, Illinois. Those are the people that got him elected to Congress.
That's right.
Don't put a train in a slave state. And, is that the bottom line here?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So
that,
he convinced
but also
Congress with that statement.
The whole reason for the Gadsden Purchase was a southern transcontinental route.
To get that through there.
To get that through here because it was easier to come through an area that was not mountainous and was pretty flat.
Oh, yeah.
An all-weather train line.
Oh, yeah. And, Melissa, a whole bunch of your, shall we say, ancestral friends?
Ancestral friends?
Well, the friends of the Six Guns and
Shady Ladies. Were wandering around down here. But no, what I was going to go back to is what he's talking about is, yes, slavery was an issue, but it was more commerce than anything else. It was also a payback to a lot of the people that supported the campaign and such, too.
Well, it was an interesting time in El Paso, and we got one now. We got to take a break, however.
A break.
And we are going to do trivia in the second hour, but we're going to – can you name a special without me giving you the menu at Pepe's? Let me give you the menu.
But we need to get
sure.
What I do with it.
I don't know.
I would say
here we go.
The chili relleno plate.
Chili rellenos, and when you give them away on a show like this, it's two rellenos, not
right.
Three. I'm sorry, but that's just what they told me to tell you. The chili rellenos are the biggie.
With rice and beans.
Rice and beans, and if you ask them nice, they'll give you some of that fabulous coleslaw.
Right.
Some people think it's flammable, but it's not. It's just vinegar.
It's delicious.
Well, you either love it or you hate it because right. I mean it's German coleslaw.
Yeah. Does it have green chili in it?
It could.
Oh, now there. Now I'd like it if it had
Woody.
Green chili.
No, it's got spicy
I'm with Woody on that.
If you want some green chili, it's easy. I mean, just dump it right in there. They can do that. But that's it. Pepe's today. The special again is the chili rellenos, and you get two of them today on the special.
Right.
Okay, we got that figured out. We're going to take a break and come back and talk railroad history some more. And if you have a thought or a comment or a question, this is the about railroads.
Yes.
This is the crowd. What do you do about that?
Well, two things. You can give us a call at 915-544-KTSM or go to our El Paso History Radio Show Facebook page and check out the one of the cars that just got moved recently.
That's the next topic. We're going to get to that in just a minute.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
Right now, there's a child living in extreme poverty with no future and no hope. But you can bring hope when you become a Compassion International sponsor. Just text the word CHILD to 83393 and sponsor a child right now.
Ask yourself, if you built a van for your business, where would you start? At the beginning, of course. With the people who invented the work van over 100 years ago, Mercedes-Benz. You'd give your new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter advanced technology and safety to keep you connected and protected. You'd make it available in diesel and gas, and there would be thousands of configurations and upfits to choose from. You build it right here in the USA, because your one-of-a-kind business deserves nothing less than a van that's built for you. Introducing the all-new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, the safest, most innovative Sprinter yet, starting at just $33,790. Built for you, the all-new Sprinter, built in the USA. Mercedes-Benz, vans, born to run.
MSRP excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Options, model availability, and actual dealer price may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Equipment described as optional. 2019 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter available soon.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-900-6131. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now, 1-800-900-6131. That's 1-800-900-6131. 1-800-900-6131.
Introducing the grand opening of State Line RV and Boat Storage. It's El Paso's most convenient, well-lit, easy-access RV storage with plenty of pull-through parking, covered spaces, sewer dump, air station, and so much more. Call 915-497-0124 or just stop by 1895 Appaloosa across from Summit Park Casino. State Line RV and Boat Storage. Mention this ad and get 1 month free. Some restrictions apply.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Got a lot going on. We got Jorge on hold there. We got 544-5876. You want to talk to these guys about railroad history. A lot of stuff to tell you. It's been almost all the time, all over the place, Bernie Sargent on our promotions on Facebook.
Everywhere.
Well, we put him on TV pretty good, and to do that, we promote the events that are coming up. We promote it when it went on archive on YouTube, and now we got all eight of them on there, four from November, four from February, and we've got those all up on how do you get there? You go to youtube.com/El Paso History TV, and you can see all eight of those. And the last one we did was on Concordia, and that was kind of fun. And so that's all out there and available to take a look at. Another couple things to tell you. Amigos is open. Thank you for supporting them when you can on Montana, one block east of Cotton. They survived that fire and turned that thing back on. Also, just to let you know, the Poppy Festival is scheduled technically for March 23rd. That's when the bureaucrats decide it was going to be. But they have to pick that like 6 months out, right? So, you know, what are they?
So.
Well, and Prince and I were just discussing during the break, a bunch of poppies are now out.
Right.
Take a look at
those.
They're
beautiful.
What do you got, Melissa? You got something going on?
Well, this is, like we were talking about, the history of Texas, and it's, of course, the birthday of Texas. But the Alamo has a wonderful site that you could go to. This is something I would love to see done in El Paso. It's a video to where it's being done. It's at the Alamo.org, and they've done video to where you can actually look at what an area looked like at one time, and then that you scroll over and you see what it looks like today. It is amazing, the technology, how they did this to look what the Alamo looked like at one time and what it looks like today. I'd love to see something like that done here in
That'd
El Paso.
Great.
Oh my God, it's amazing!
I tried to figure that out back when I was doing more videos. I couldn't figure out the animation.
Oh, this was so smooth. It's done so well. So I'm going to contact this guy. I think this would be wonderful for El Paso because obviously we're not going to see it if they keep it up.
That noise is Prince McKenzie undoing the microphone and putting it in his pocket. You can't have that.
Sorry.
All right, we got to talk to Jorge on the phone. Jorge's on the radio. Good morning, dude.
Good morning. I called because besides it being Texas Independence Day and wanting to wish everybody there in the studio and outside the studio,
thank you so much.
Happy birthday.
You're welcome. I also wanted to mention that out of Sicily in 1881, the year the prince's family came into, father came into El Paso, my family came into Paso de Norte across the river. But I specifically wanted to ask a prince, the depot here on Campbell, where Franklin is, my father lived right across from it, 809. And I want to ask him, when did that particular depot stop functioning?
Oh, Prince, you're not going to put your headphones on. Prince didn't even hear that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Sorry, I missed it.
That was the Southern Pacific.
Let's try this again.
Woody,
when did the Southern Pacific Depot close?
I'm looking at you like, why aren't you responding to the headphones on?
All right. The first wooden depot.
So that's the question.
All right. The Southern Pacific Depot was built in 1881, and it existed around until the 1940s, and it was used as a freight house for many, many years after all passenger service was worked through the Union Station.
That building's not standing there now?
And so, no. It is, the location is right across from the Federal Reserve Bank on Main Street.
Well, that was where the trains went.
That was where
the trains went right
stopped.
Down Main Street. Yeah,
right.
And an interesting thing happened in May 16th of 1881, the train stopped at the corner of San Jacinto Plaza, and all of the dignitaries got on there.
Uh-huh.
And then they rode two blocks down to this other location where the depot was under construction. There was
a platform
there, and then all of the politicians and the mayor of Juarez made speeches and told everybody how great the railroad was going to be, and then they had a big party that lasted until the next day.
And then they missed the train. No, I don't know. Jorge, did we cover that for you?
No,
Prince.
Prince, you're saying that the one that is standing right now, when you go along the interstate?
Okay.
Oh, you're talking about the red brick
on
building.
On the corner of Campbell Street and Franklin I-10. Street that leads into I-10. Okay,
yeah.
That is was originally built in 1903 as the El Paso and Southwestern train station. And then in 1924, the Southern Pacific Railroad took over that railroad, and so that became their freight house at that time. And then it became the Acme Freight House, and then it went into disuse, and then it became a commercial building.
Would that be acceptable to you as a location of a museum for railroad history?
Great
absolutely.
Oh, okay, so how do we get our hands on
it?
Melissa, how do we get our hands on that building?
The lottery.
Oh, Shelley's working on that for us already.
In 2001, some far-sighted people in city council and city government actually had the purchase of that building placed on the city budget, and even though the money was allocated already, city council couldn't agree on whether or not to purchase it. So they asked the property owner to give them a six-month
option
to consider buying it. And the next day, the owner said, "The hell with the city," and sold it.
Yeah.
And it.
Well, who owns it today?
Today, a business group. Headed by some of the Rogers family, owns it.
It's sitting idle, isn't it?
No, it's...
Is it in use?
It's under some construction.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. They're repairing a lot of the past damage by some of the most unscrupulous property owners that did own it for some years. And let it fall into disrepair.
Okay, you got a 501c3 working over here, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, it's a donation, people. If you want to get rid of that building and not have any more worries, give it to Prince. Oh, just my Jorge, is that go okay with you?
Yeah, Prince, then that particular building, it ceased all operations completely in totality in what year then?
What's that?
When did it finally quit operating as a railroad facility?
Okay, we know that when the first diesel locomotives came to El Paso in 1956, that it was still being used. Probably right up into the 60s, the early 60s, it was being used by a shipping contractor named Acme Fast Freight. And
was there a coyote involved? No, I sure hope not.
We've got pictures of train cars being loaded right there. They actually parked trucks on one side and they parked train cars on the other side. And so stuff was being shipped out. Offloaded from trucks and unloaded onto trucks from train cars directly right through that station.
And Jorge, you had family living there somewhere?
Yeah, right at 809 Franklin, my father.
Wow.
Family, right.
What's on that spot today?
Now it's just that
freeway. A freeway, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's where the water collects when it rains.
Oh, I see. Your family turned into an arroyo.
We do know.
Good luck with that.
a very important thing about that building is we do know that locomotive number one actually ran out of that station, and our big locomotive, 3420, ran out of that station. And so we have another very important connection, a strong connection to that building.
Jorge, have you ever seen 3420?
No, what is 34?
It's the name of the locomotive that used to be parked out in front of Union Station.
Yes,
the
I have.
Big thing. It's
I've been
huge.
To the museum when Prince was at the museum right there on that particular location he was mentioning about Visitor Center.
No, that was locomotive number
that's
one.
That's number one.
That's a tiny little train.
Number one.
That's a small train compared to this other one.
3420 is three times larger, times more powerful.
Well, mission for you, if you accept it, please do so. Got a lottery ticket and give money to Prince.
Okay? Yeah. We will be having a train show
Thank
May 18th
like
and 9th.
Thank you, sir.
We'll be having a train show May 18th and 19th where you're more than welcome to come out and look at 3420.
Out of Freeport.
Mac Moran.
Okay.
Yes,
and
that's
new,
off of Hawkins Boulevard.
And your newly received car will be part of that?
No. It's not ready for prime time.
Got it.
And so we have a display train, which includes the steam locomotive, a boxcar, and a caboose. And so that's what we're putting on show. And we'll have a certified steam engineer that was trained to operate the steam engines, explaining to people. And we always have fun with the kids because the kids look at all the controls in the cabin. They say, where's the steering wheel?
Yeah.
And then we'll have a conductor in the caboose explaining train operations. That's the operations center for the train.
I asked that guy. I was over there the last time Six Guns blew the place up.
They'll
the train.
Be back to blow it up again.
Right.
Well, maybe successful this time.
We have a reenactment of a train robbery by the Six Guns and Shady Lady.
An authentic train robbery, historic train
robbery. They might blow it up this time.
They might actually take care of your problem. You won't have something to display.
We'll move it over a track or two.
I asked that engineer who was in there. He looked like he knew what he was talking about. I said, what would it take to turn this train on? He looked at me seriously and said, about $500,000.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. 500 grand. Get it started here. Let's go.
But it is repairable. It can run.
That's what
Absolutely.
He was saying.
It could.
Get that thing going and chug it around a little
wouldn't
bit.
Wouldn't that be fun to have a train that runs kind of up the valleys?
You're talking way
forward.
Cool.
This had actually been done in Albuquerque, and they are about ready to start running their steam engine all around the state of New Mexico.
El Paso needs a running steam engine.
How far is it going to run?
Well, it's going to make some exhibition runs. They'll probably come to El Paso and then they're limited to running on Santa Fe tracks because it's a Santa Fe engine, and so they may not be able to run through the Tularosa Basin.
Oh, wow.
And they're negotiating.
Well, we have a timeout because it won't fit. Or it's politics.
Track size.
No.
It's different railroads. Different railroads.
Union Pacific Railroad.
It's politics.
Owns the line through the Tularosa Basin.
Now the track
size. Who owns the track?
The only track size difference is like the Durango train up in Silverton.
Yeah, we had some narrow gauge tracks here in the Southwest.
Well, did they
and those are the only ones that are left.
They had some at Asarco for a while, I think. I found some tracks didn't make any sense.
Okay, well, yeah, they have some at Freeport MacMoran too.
And
they shuttle around copper ingots.
That's true, they do.
And so they have to move that stuff around from one plant to another plant, and
you're right.
And they do that.
Freeport is full of trains.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, absolutely.
And so that's. That's mining railroad.
Okay. We're not going to – Sergio, do we owe you a break by now? We probably do, right?
It's like –
But let's talk to Robert on the phone here real quick, 544-5876. We get Robert out of that. What's up?
Good morning. Hey. I was listening to your program this morning, and I don't recall Mr. McKenzie, but I worked for Pacific Fruit Express back in the day, and I was in maintenance on the ice platform at Globe Mills and downtown. And just to let you know, the first ice trains from the west, the Imperial Valley and places in all of California and Arizona made their stops at different ice plants, and El Paso was one of the last ones. And Globe Ice Mills made the ice just for the railroad. And that platform was the stop for the perishable trains, and then as the trains got bigger and bigger, they built a bigger ice dock at the El Paso yards. We still manufactured ice, and I worked in that plant for the railroad on our equipment, and they delivered ice in old ice cars from that dock to the docks downtown.
Right. I loaded cars there, and then we moved downtown for loading the trains.
When's the last time they did that? I mean, you got electronics to do everything now, right?
Now, what year was that that it closed?
They quit icing cars in about 1971.
71. Wow.
I was working in 1965, and
I was too, but I don't recall you.
I remember every train that would come in would have a few more refrigeration cars, and so they did not need to be iced. And that was
the beginning of the end for that.
Exactly. That was the beginning of the end of the ice service. And but I would like for you to contact me, and because I'm trying to write a history now for the Journal of the Historical Society
story. Let's get his phone number off air. Shelley can tell you. Do you mind that, Robert? Is that all right?
And please do that, and let's get together because that's an important part of El Paso's history.
I've got a hardback history book of the railroad and perishable business, and it has a lot about PFE in it. You got to give me a number, and I might call you.
All right, hold on. We'll take your number. Shelley will come on and pick that up from you, all right?
We actually have the ice house doors saved.
cool.
And so that was a small piece of history that we were able to
play. Hey, Robert, you can come visit the old Doors to the Ice House if you play this right. Yeah. Well, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay.
Hold on here. Shelly will get your number.
Enjoy talking to you.
Appreciate that. Okay. Hold on. Thank you.
Where did they get the passenger ice for the passenger trains?
Chip off the old ice
same
block.
Same place.
It would have come off same truck. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Sergio, is it time for a break here in this reality program known as El Paso's Railroads Come to Life? No. Yes, it is. Okay. Throw the number out there, Melissa.
Well,
what the heck? Why not?
Hey, everybody's like trains. Call us 915-544-5876 or 544-KTSM.
Ask yourself, if you built a van for your business, where would you start? At the beginning, of course. With the people who invented the work van over 100 years ago, Mercedes-Benz. You'd give your new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter advanced technology and safety to keep you connected and protected. You'd make it available in diesel and gas, and there would be thousands of configurations and upfits to choose from. You build it right here in the USA, because your one-of-a-kind business deserves nothing less than a van that's built for you. Introducing the all-new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, the safest, most innovative Sprinter yet, starting at just $33,790. Built for you, the all-new Sprinter, built in the USA. Mercedes-Benz, vans, born to run.
MSRP excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Options, model availability, and actual dealer price may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Equipment described as optional. 2019 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter available soon.
1 in 3 adults in America have prediabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move's called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben has mom my. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple one-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse.
Need a walking or running partner? Need a security system? Need some entertainment? Need some love? A pet from the Humane Society of El Paso can be all those things, but you have to adopt one first. The Humane Society of El Paso, open for adoptions 7 days a week, Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 5. Come on over. Your new best friend is waiting at 4991 Fred Wilson. Be part of the solution with the Humane Society of El Paso.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Pohl.
We got some history lessons for you. We got people calling in still, 544-5876. History lesson, the Rio Grande chapter of the Daughters of the Republic of Texas. Meeting Friday, March the 8th, 2019. That's the year, right?
The year.
That's it, okay. But anyway, so we meet at the Greenery inside Sunland Park Mall, 11 a.m. The program is Texas History Month, presented by Betty Phillips and Dorothy Elder. And if you want to get involved in that, call them up, 760-5775. Harvey Girls. Now, there's a railroad connection for you. The Harvey Girls of El Paso, Texas, meeting Monday, March 11th. And that's also that 2019 year. And that's at Union Passenger Station Depot, 700 West San Francisco, 2 p.m. And this program is the history of railroad police protection of passengers and freight. Presented by, you ready for a drum roll? Woody Bear.
Woody.
Yeah, I think he would. And his visitors are welcome. Call 591-2326. Your turn.
My turn. Okay. The El Paso Corral, the Westerners International, will meet Friday, March 15th at the Holiday Inn at El Paso West at I-10 and Sunland Park Drive. This month's program is Women on the Raid on Columbus, New Mexico by Pancho Villa. Patricia Kidney will be doing the presentation, and the dinner and program is $20. Call 759-9638 to make your reservation today, and then call Club Friendship. We'll meet Tuesday, March 26th at St. Paul's Methodist Church on Edgemere at 11 a.m. And their program is Teresa Araya Curandera, who is a faith healer and a Mexican revolutionary. And this is presented by Esther Sanchez, and she does a great program. And the luncheon program is only $10. Give them a call at 591-2326 to reserve your seat. These are all really great programs.
Teresita Urrea was a very interesting.
Urrea.
That woman was very interesting.
Oh, she was incredible.
And that's the report you need to take a look at.
All right, lived in El Paso.
We did stir people up on the telefono. Well, she was kicked out of Mexico, basically.
Well, Mexico
was out to get her.
Yep.
So she showed up here. Anyway, all right, we got Edwin on the phone. Ed, you guys ready for a phone call?
Sure.
Prince McKenzie's always ready for it. Oh, but before we do, tell that one story we told in a break about how you iced the passengers.
What?
You did. You said you iced the passengers.
Okay. Passenger
all right.
Trains.
The very.
Detail.
The very first air conditioning in vehicles was done on the railroad.
Fine.
And the ice plant would provide the ice and the people that service the train put on the water and so forth, the food and whatnot, they would load blocks of ice in the tops of the passenger cars, and air would be sucked in when the train was running. Air would be sucked in, flow over the blocks of ice, and down onto the passengers, and that was the very first refrigerated air conditioning in any vehicles.
I told you he iced the passengers.
You know, a quick question on that. Would the smoke have also had got – that would have been interesting, smoky cold air.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or no, maybe the smoke, though, would condense onto the ice.
Let's go back in history. Let's also take a phone call. Are you ready?
Okay.
Edwin, on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. I have two questions. And you mentioned in the passenger transit, you mentioned, would it be feasible in today's economic climate to have either long-distance high-speed trains, you know, a couple of thousand miles, even medium distance, say 400 or 500 miles, to have those things, in your opinion?
Okay, the answer is yes, yes. They're constructing one right now to connect the Dallas area with the Houston area, and we have medium high-speed trains running between Dallas and Fort Worth. That's called the Trinity Express.
Any different tracks for that?
No, all the same.
No.
It's a high-speed commuter line, and we also have a version operated by the same company in New Mexico, and it's called the New Mexico Railrunner. It connects Belen, south of Albuquerque, with Santa Fe, and it's a high-speed line, and people all across New Mexico and some visionary people here in El Paso want that line to extend to El Paso because every day we have thousands of people going back and forth between Las Cruces and El Paso.
Why don't I put them on the train? Edwin, go ahead, Edwin. Yeah.
Good question.
Edwin, go ahead.
What would be the speed now of this one between, say, going 300 miles between Dallas and Houston? Would it be like 100 miles an hour or maybe 200 miles?
That one is definitely going to be more than 100 miles an hour. And,
maybe 200 miles?
No, not that fast. But the Acela that runs in the East Coast can reach speeds like that. And it depends on a lot of factors, positive train control. It depends on having the tracks fenced off so that people can't wander on or people can't drive across the tracks and so forth. But we already have the tracks in place between El Paso and Las Cruces, and the state of New Mexico has been interested in that for some time. And there is an actual working agreement between the state of New Mexico and the state of Colorado to jointly operate a railroad. That could be done between Texas and New Mexico.
The speed also depends on whether it's a dedicated line or not.
Right.
But the one between Houston and Dallas, is that being done by a private railroad or with public money?
That's a private railroad, a private company that's investing in that.
How about that?
That sounds very promising. I think it's a good idea. Well, I was wondering about longer distances between New York and Chicago or, say, L.A. and Chicago. Would that be practical concerning a long distance?
Of course.
Right. That's one place where I disagree, because if you want 200 miles, it takes of an hour. It takes 12 hours to go from L.A. to Chicago, and you drive at night. There may not be the support for it, but
the technology is there.
For Amtrak myself.
I think it's
basically a socialistic failure.
Yeah.
Well, Edwin, thanks for the call. Appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
You take her easy. All right, last thought there on that one? Should we move on? All right, moving on to my favorite three-letter word guy named Roy.
Roy.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, dude,
morning,
we're good.
Roy.
What's up?
Hey, Roy.
I've got several comments.
Well, we got about a minute for you. Go for it.
Well, okay. First of all, the track between here and Albuquerque won't be good until they put in centralized traffic control.
Got it.
Because right now the BNSF freight trains that go up and down, they have to stop every once in a while or ahead of time, get track warrants between mile marker this and mile marker that.
Okay, next thought.
So, okay, it's right after Pearl Harbor, December 8th, there was a train load of field artillery left Fort Bliss, headed for California on the Southern Pacific. It went through El Paso, Texas.
Yes, indeed.
And the other thing is, 3420 has run. Apparently these guys forget about that.
No, they don't forget about it. It's just not currently running.
Okay, well, that's not what I got out of it. Okay.
No, I've seen the picture. You guys at Freeport MacMoran, the thing is running.
Right.
Yeah.
3420 last ran in 1986.
86,
was,
there you go.
It was restored to running condition in 1981.
And
well, I remember when it ran on the number one track right next to the freeway.
Right.
That's
when
cool.
When it was first put on the track.
Hey, we're going to see you at Pepe's today?
No, sir. I ain't going to make it today.
Tell listeners about your father.
What's that?
Tell listeners about your father.
Well, right now we need to take a break here. Can you hold that story?
Yeah.
All right, hold on there. Taking a break here, Sergio. 3, 2, 1, hit the button.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the Juan and only margarita from the Cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
The West Side's newest luxury apartments are now leasing at Las Mansiones, 1776 Cimarron Trails, near North Ressler Drive and Paseo del Norte, a mile from the new West Side Providence Hospital. Las Mansiones features three-story units with amazing views. To the east, the majestic Franklin Mountains, and to the west, El Paso's Upper Valley. You'll enjoy sunsets like you've never seen before from your own private balcony. Las Mansiones, 915-704-1776.
I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez, and we're the host of Red Pilled America, a new storytelling podcast.
Red Pilled America tells the stories Hollywood and the mainstream media don't want you to hear. Visit the iHeartRadio app to listen to Red Pilled America.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
A lot going on here. Hey, Roy, make it quick. What happened to your father? He was a conductor, is that right?
He retired as a conductor.
Oh.
No, he didn't. I'm sorry. He did not retire as a conductor. He made a permanent conductor.
Cool.
And he died of a stroke on his way. He was marked up to go to work back in 1973. He was into his 38th year on the railroad.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing the story. We'll see you at Pepe someday.
Yes, sir.
All right, you take her easy. Thanks a lot. And I want to thank the people in the control room. Shelly's been running around a little bit in there. We'll make her work a lot harder.
We're getting your exercise
hour,
today, yeah. Yes.
And then the man in there, the man who does all of the electrons in there, Sergio Valenzuela. And Shelly Sutherland. Thank you all very much in there. All right, we got that figured out. And, Prince, we got about 3 minutes here. You want to take on just a promo of one of you guys on the car coming in that you guys acquired? Well, where do you want to go with this? We'll take it up in the second hour, big time.
All right. Years ago, more than 10 years ago, I found a car, a old 19th century rail car, sitting on a street with next to houses and so forth. And so I eventually found the property owner, and we had lots of conversations over the years. And we said, you should give that to the museum.
Ah.
And so it actually happened this year.
And we have a picture of it on Facebook. 3,887 people have been reached with that picture since Thursday night, actually.
Great.
And we thank El Paso Inc. for the
It'd
picture.
It'd be fun to have the family in here, because I remember talking to the one son years ago about it when it all of a sudden started putting back together what this was. And it was talking about his dad, how he set it up and the cost, because they didn't have much money, and how as the kids grew up, how he added on to it.
Very interesting story. And I wrote up a list of oral history questions. And the family is working on putting together their stories, their individual stories. But it was so nice when we actually picked up that car and moved it. It was so nice to see them there. And then the tears started flowing, and I couldn't blame them. It was really a special time for them, because they didn't want it to be scrapped.
No, uh-uh.
They wanted it to be saved.
People don't realize how heavy something that is. That was 40,000 pounds.
I saw the cranes you pulled, two of them.
Two cranes.
Wow. Yeah. And so that's going to – how did they get that thing to make it into a living quarters? How did they acquire it?
The father got it for free, as I remember, wasn't it?
Oh, no. The father had – he knew what went on there, because his father had worked for the railroad. And so he went down there and he bought this old car. And then he paid a firm to move it. And now we've got two different accounts of how much they paid for it, and we'd have to iron that out.
So what happened to the wheels?
Yeah. Well, a company was hired. He didn't need the wheels,
right.
And so that was cheaper. And so he hired a company to move it and place it at that site, and that site was right outside the city limits. So it was legal.
The time, that was legal.
To put it there in a residential, or what became a residential area, and it was a secluded residential area.
Woody, before we go to break, tell the one caller about where 3420 is going to be on display again.
3420 is at Freeport MacMoran. It's at 850 Hawkins, May 18th and 19th.
You can't drive up there today and see it.
Right.
People should know that.
You can drive by and see it from a distance, but you cannot go to
it. It's not open until May
18th and 19th, you will be able to climb aboard, take a tour, look at it, enjoy the robbery. It's a free event.
And you're going to do a robbery again? What are you going to do, Melissa?
Are
you going to do a robbery?
I wasn't there last year, so I'm sure they'll be doing some shenanigans.
I know who did that robbery.
Yeah, they talked about doing something like that, but maybe doing something a little different this time.
And there will also be a lot of educational exhibits there. And the historic model train club will be there with, and the coin club will be there with their medallions.
Prince McKenzie and Woody Bear, thank you guys for being here. We've got another hour to go. We'll talk more about this. But it occurs to me that El Paso needs a real train museum run by guys like you who know what the heck you're talking about. Apparently on somebody else's money. That's what we're working on, right?
Right.
Big donation needed. We'll see you guys next hour. We'll talk more about that. You coming back next
hour?
I'm
coming back. I'm going to have everybody's picture up on the Facebook page by then. So.
See you then.
Thanks for listening to the El Paso History Show. There's another hour to go, so please stay tuned. This hour is brought to you by Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Sargent Home and Business Inventories. And by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments, 915-704-1776. We'll be right back after the news, right here on News Radio 690 KTSM El Paso.
Most serial killers don't make any effort to involve the media or investigators. They almost want their crimes to go unnoticed. But the idea of committing a crime and then calling up the police and bragging about it, that's a whole nother level of terror.
Here we are, 50 years after the first Zodiac killing. Who doesn't want to know how it turns out?
From the creators of Atlanta Monster comes Season 2. This is Monster, the Zodiac Killer. Listen and follow on the iHeartRadio app.
NBC News.